Welcome to Digital Creator. Today, I wanted to chat with you about, first things first, Rick Rubin had Adam Azzeri, the CEO of Instagram, on his show. And I also will be talking about the most popular social media apps when it comes to content monetization and audience time. And then I'm going to be sharing a workflow that I've been using for my thumbnails that has been incredibly efficient. So starting out, I just listened to an episode of Rick Rubin's Tetragrammatron podcast, where he featured a conversation with Adam Azzeri, the CEO of Instagram. Instagram has gone through quite a bit of changes in the last few years. They've added a bunch of new features. They've even created a new Instagram app with Instagram Threads. And Rick Rubin asked him some questions that I thought Adam Azzeri's responses were worth sharing to you. A couple key takeaways. If you like this type of stuff, I would highly suggest listening to Rick Rubin's podcast and the full episode of his conversation with Adam Azzeri. A couple things to highlight. So number one, Rick Rubin had asked Adam what social media apps he uses. And, you know, the obvious answer that Adam came back with, he was like, oh, I use Instagram. But how he replied is what made me kind of pause and want to even share this part. He said that he, you know, uses Instagram, but it's primarily for work. And he does it to see basically like how hard it is for creators on the app. In his response, my gut was just like, yeah, this is a man that understands the struggle. Even though he's at the top of that app, he's trying to figure out like how to make it the best place for creators while also trying to make it great for investors and shareholders. And he's trying to make it great for people to spend time on. Instagram now does all these different things. So to hear in his response about how he basically kind of sympathized or empathized with the difficulties, you know, and that he's looking for bugs and things like that, but he uses it kind of like a creator to see how hard it is really for creators and the complexity of everything that goes into it. He also mentioned that he uses, you know, Facebook, of course, but heavy user of YouTube and then also Twitter and Threads being an Instagram app, which he said that he uses, of course, mainly for work. But I thought it was interesting that he is still a Twitter user as well. Adam also highlighted that a common misconception about Instagram is that people spend a bunch of time in their feed. The user behavior part of Instagram really stuck out to me. So he talks about how people perceive that, you know, Instagram is in the feed. Everything's happening in the feed. But most of Instagram is happening in the DMs and in stories. That's where most people are going. They'll go to the feed and then they'll have conversations in private. So we see comments and things like that. Comments are obviously huge. That's a big part of content on Instagram. But the direct messages and the stories are where most of the conversations are happening. He said that people feel like when they post something to their feed, it feels permanent. It doesn't feel like they have much control over it. So when they're sharing two stories, with it going away in 24 hours, it's much easier and less pressure to make something that they want the world to see, you know, in a couple of years. And the user behavior behind how people are using the apps, I find so fascinating. You know, as a creator, how can we make content that people are sharing through direct messages, in stories, things like that? More personal content and making it for the medium which it's consumed. Because creating something for stories or for direct messages is way different than creating something for the feed. Another thing that Adam also mentioned was how people use Instagram creatively within the constraints of the platform. For example, he noted Rick Rubin's practice of posting a quote card on the feed every day and then manually removing it after 24 hours and posting a new quote card. He also mentioned how Meghan and Harry used the app in a unique way previously by following a bunch of charitable organizations each month, and it would be under their following, and then the next month they would remove all of those that they were following and then follow a bunch more. Basically just highlighting how people will find ways to use the app that they didn't intend to when they were creating the app. And that creativity, I think, is something that we can all kind of take a cue from, is like, how can we use this in ways that aren't being used right now, or taking, you know, inspiration from how other people are using it in creative ways, kind of remixing it into something that works for what we're doing. You don't have to just use it in this cookie cutter, copy and paste way, is my takeaway from that. Now, looking at Rick Rubin's actual podcast, I've been wanting to talk about this on the podcast for a while now, and I think this is just like the spot to do it. is his podcast is fantastic in the design of the podcast. He has a really unique and captivating format. And if you've never listened to his podcast, I'll kind of explain it for you. So it starts out with this intro music that's kind of mystical, has this like immersive soundscape to it. It sets the tone. Then it hops right into the conversation. There's no introduction. There's no title that's going to tell you everything about the episode or anything like that. It's just the person that he's interviewing. It's their name is the title. And I heard Rick Rubin talk about how he approaches his podcast. I believe he talked about it on Andrew Huberman's podcast. He said basically he wants it to be like you're kind of walking into a conversation that's already happening and you're being a part of it. And similar to how I approach video clips for content creation, where you start with a hook, even if you're repurposing something, I can tell Rick Rubin, his team, takes that same idea with conversations that he's creating. It starts with like a hook. With the Adam Mosseri podcast interview, this was the first sentence of the interview. And this is what Mosseri said. If I'm completely honest, I've never really liked the term social media. Now that's fascinating coming from the CEO of a social media app, one of the biggest social media apps, right? And that wasn't like a planned thing that Adam Mosseri had said, especially for the introduction. It was something that he naturally just said during the beginning of his conversation with Rick Rubin. And then they just started it from that point on. And you can hear through the conversation, I think there's like some clanking of utensils. Rick captures these interviews with no cameras. I don't exactly know what his microphone placement technique is, but if I had to guess, it is very unobtrusive and it probably blends into the environment so you don't feel like you're talking directly into a microphone. With Rick Rubin's recording background, you would think a microphone would naturally be a part of it, but that's his producer hat on, right? He's taking this different approach to it because he knows every little placement of something affects the end result. And his end result, he wants it to be, it's just a completely natural conversation. Now, he has to give up some things for that, like audio quality. It doesn't have the best audio quality. He has the best conversations. That's where the emphasis is. So I think that's something we could all learn from there. Another thing that the podcast doesn't have is some intrusive podcast ad break. He does podcast ads, but they feel like part of the immersive atmosphere that he creates at the very beginning of the podcast with that music. It's not the same music that when it cuts into a podcast ad. It's different, but it doesn't feel jarring. I've heard people say that they don't skip his ads because it doesn't take you out. It keeps you in this world, which is, again, something we could all learn from. They're so well done. Next up, I want to talk about how users are spending their time on social media platforms. Why I think this is important is because trends change, right? What was the top social media platform just a couple of years ago might not be the top today. In fact, most likely isn't. I don't think TikTok was the top. I'm not saying TikTok is the top today, but it's one of the top. So I did a little research on this, and from what I found, these are the top five platforms as far as time spent on these platforms, which is like the average amount of time per month per user. On Twitter, users spend an average of 10.2 hours per month. That's number five. Number four, Instagram is at 15.9 hours per month per user. Facebook is number three, 18.6 hours per month per user. TikTok, number two, 28.5 hours per month per user. And then number one is YouTube, which is 37 hours per month per user. Couple observations and insights around this. So YouTube and TikTok are the top two platforms in terms of user time spent, which it makes sense for a couple of reasons. Number one, YouTube's longer form content naturally lends itself to longer user engagement, right? If you're going to watch a 20-minute video, usually on the platform, or 10 minutes or however long, that's longer than what it would take you to read something on Twitter. And then with TikTok's algorithm, they've just got the algorithm dialed in to keep users engaged. Despite their shorter content format, it does video really well and it keeps people on the app. And just last week, I was talking about how YouTube is going more into things that TikTok offers. And then we've also recently talked about how TikTok is going into more things and features that YouTube offers. They're both starting to mirror each other more and more, which is fascinating because both are the top two apps when it comes to getting people to stay on the app and use the app. A couple of creator considerations around this. YouTube is a strong platform to invest in due to the watch hours that it accumulates and the diverse content formats it has. So just like I was mentioning last week, YouTube said, you know, shorts are not going anywhere. They're more popular than ever. And YouTube lends itself to both horizontal and vertical content better than any of the other apps. TikTok is trying to recreate that and incentivizing users, you know, to upload horizontal videos. Is it going to pay off? Only time will tell. But regardless, you know, YouTube is owned by Google. Google is a top company, and TikTok is owned by ByteDance, which is a Chinese company, which obviously I'm American-based. I would bet YouTube long-term, but it doesn't make sense to me why you wouldn't want to lead with YouTube these days, given that you can upload everything that you post to YouTube to TikTok, but you can't upload everything you post from TikTok to YouTube. Leading with YouTube only sets you up for success longer down the road. With that being said, it is incredibly risky to go all in on one platform, and I get that. I just recently shared how, you know, I've lost access to my YouTube channel for over 100 days with no communication from Google or YouTube, and then it just got reinstated, and then I've got access again. It's like, oh, sorry, we made a mistake. Very little control over that. It's one of the risks you run for any of the social media platforms. And something I'll highlight here at the end is, despite its professional focus, from what I found, and this was through a website called Kinsta, LinkedIn users spend an average of only 17 minutes per month on the platform. 17 minutes per month. Can you believe that? Continuing on this trend of research I've been doing lately, I came across a study from Epidemic Sound, who I've used their music on this podcast before. They're a fantastic company that provides music that you can use in your own content. They did some research on the creator economy, and they surveyed 1,500 monetizing creators who shared the top platforms that they're monetizing their content from. Now, this is a mix of doing like brand deals, selling their own products and services, ads, all that type of stuff. So it's not just brand deals. It's not just selling products and services. It's all of that stuff. And when we look at top platforms in terms of revenue, like ad revenue, Facebook and Instagram are at the top when it comes to social media platforms. YouTube, owned by Google, is huge. But when we're looking at just social media platforms, YouTube is not bigger than Facebook and Instagram. All right, so the results of the study. Facebook is the third most profitable platform for monetizing creators. YouTube is the second, and drumroll please, TikTok is actually the most profitable, which was surprising to me. I thought, especially after sharing in that last segment about user time, that the more time spent on a platform might equal more money for the creator. Doesn't seem to be that case right now. Regardless, though, they're somewhat close, TikTok and YouTube. And we're seeing, you know, the correlation here, right? User time spent on the app consuming is TikTok and YouTube. Monetization for creators, we're seeing TikTok and YouTube. I don't know about you, but this study and kind of everything I've shared up until here is just making me take Instagram less seriously and consider using it differently. I speak with so many people that place such an importance on Instagram and the metrics around it, whether it's views, followers, things like that. But the data is showing that people are just spending less time there, which makes sense for why it's harder for people to grow and convert followers into paying or brand deals or any of that stuff. Last thing I wanted to share with you today is one of my workflows. Something we have to do a lot of as creators is have a lot of photos of ourselves. And I don't know about you, but scheduling photo shoots is not something I just do every other week in my calendar. So here's what I do. It's not the only way, but it's been a fantastic way to generate a lot of images of myself. So I record my video, whatever it is, and then I'll have the video on my desktop. Now I'll use either the final version of the video or the raw video, doesn't really matter, but I'll use an app called SnapMotion to grab a still from the video. Now you could use a screenshot, like you could make a full screen, use QuickTime, something like that. But here's the reasons I use SnapMotion, and I have no affiliation with them. So use whatever you want. This is just why I use it. It's because I can scroll frame by frame, like really easy and minute, and it saves a high quality screenshot at the click of a button at the same resolution of the video. So I don't have to worry about it being pixelated or anything like that. So the image is high quality, and I can grab a bunch of stills from the video way faster than taking photos and then editing the photos and all that stuff. And so one of the reasons why using the screenshots for thumbnails is the image quality on thumbnails doesn't need to be the absolute highest. For example, you might have a 4K video. Even if you grab the highest quality screenshot image, that's fine. Like, you don't, nobody is zooming in on the pixels of your thumbnail. It just needs to be a good enough quality, because when you save the YouTube thumbnail, it has to be lower quality anyways. I think it's like 1280 by 720 is what they ask for, something around that. That's not super high quality. No one's zooming in on that. So just grabbing a still from the video is the way to go. So whether you use Snap Motion, continue using screenshots, whatever it is, fantastic idea, worth trying if you haven't already. That's all I got for you this week. I will catch you in the next episode.